Father's Day is coming up, and I wanted to offer something useful to dads who are tired of living a divided life. So I'm hosting a live workshop called Become a Better Leader by Becoming a Better Dad. Here's the core idea. We are not two different men, not a work self and a home self. We are one engine. And when there's a crack in how we lead at home, impatience, disconnection, reactivity, it shows up at work too, just in a different form. Because the real issue isn't our behavior. It's the patterns we fall back on when we don't have anything left. I call that version of us default dad. He's the one who shows up when we're tired, overloaded, or distracted. And while that pattern is easiest to spot at home, it affects our leadership everywhere. This workshop is a practical playbook to help you catch default dad earlier, lead with more intention under pressure, and become a calmer father and stronger leader. It's free. Consider it my Father's Day gift to dads. The link to register is in the show notes below, or visit ambitiousdads.com. So welcome to the Ambitious Dads podcast. I am Jeff Hittner. I am the founder of Ambitious Dads, and I am so excited today. I have two dear and new friends, Chase Friedman and Rampus Castro, who I have the pleasure of meeting because they've been a part of the Founding Fathers program, which has been kind of our pilot program around fatherhood. I thought this would be an amazing place to start and explore a little bit about fatherhood and all the things that come with it as modern dads that don't just want to go into the office and be providers in a traditional sense, but really want to, have a very different relationship with their children. So, let me have you guys introduce yourself. So Chase, first of all, you're out in California. Like, tell me a little bit about your family and maybe what's the biggest challenge you're facing right now as a dad?
We need a full episode on that. So Chase Friedman, based in Manhattan Beach, California. Been here for about 20 years, all around LA. I've got two beautiful children. My daughter just turned 7 last week. My son is 4. And it is the most challenging and yet most rewarding thing in my life. But as I'm sure we all feel, it's like it's the driving purpose behind what we do. I'm an entrepreneur. I run my own business. I run an impact marketing company and I do brand coaching consulting. My mission is to help, I guess, dads as well, but entrepreneurs and leaders find that kind of balance of profit and purpose in their lives. This is something that I think is, including the dad conversation that you've created for us, finding better balance, right? We work so damn hard and we often forget why we're doing it. And you have brought to light that reason for being, and that is a big part of it. It's with our kids and as dads. And so I'm just grateful for the forum you've given us over the last, 12 weeks plus. The first time I've ever had a forum to like open up and be vulnerable and share with other dads, which is crazy to think about. I feel like moms have a little bit more of that. So thank you for being that fearless leader to kind of giving us this place and space.
Well, my pleasure. Rampus, tell us a little bit about yourself.
And Chase, you stole my thunder. We'll get into the why in a second. So Rampus, I'm based out of Caguas, Puerto Rico now, previously out of New York. I have two little ones, 5-year-old Mateo and a 2.5-year-old Nicolas. And what I'm up to these days, I run an AI venture studio. We focused on investing and building AI first companies, and helping others from navigate kind of the AI landscape. In terms of biggest challenges, by far is that balance conversation around this focus on being present and I guess I somewhat on operating in the real world and like all the different challenges around different things that kind of require or seem to require my attention and how to kind of put those things aside and just stay present and focused with the kids, with the entire point of the reason I became a dad and everything I'm kind of thing I'm hopefully focused on is just on them and how to be there for them and be that guide for them and support them. And I echo definitely Chase's comment on sort of the space that the Ambitious Dad space created for us and having that release valve space on folks that, you know, we're kind of not crazy, I guess, in the sense of some of the things we're kind of going through. It's not just us. For the longest time, at least, I've only been on this dad journey for less than 5 years. 5 years plus or whatever, where for the longest time, it felt like it was just for me, myself, and I, right? And the context of the kind of lifestyle and opportunities that we have in front of us and the kind of dad would want to be, having kind of peers that are kind of going through the same thing is the first space I've ever experienced where it gives us that opportunity to kind of share and learn from others that have kind of been there and are also further along the journey. It was definitely one of the biggest values for me.
Why do you guys think it's so hard to have these conversations outside this intentional space that we created with the founding fathers?
I'll jump in. I think people are so invested. I think my experience has been that everyone's so invested on their lifestyle that the approach to the conversation has felt generally around justifying like a folks' choices versus an exploration of like the issues and the challenges and the failures and just like the whole jam, right? It definitely just feels that whether it's family and I come from a Caribbean Latin culture, but it's felt probably different kind of similar vibes around. And let me tell you how to be XYZ versus this is kind of where I'm at. And so a lot of the conversations feel like folks just kind of, you know, you're kind of opening up just to explore. And folks come at it from, let me tell you, from some choice that they made and some decision that they have high conviction on, which we understand and appreciate. And obviously it's a complicated everything. And yet that is not what I needed. And yet it's been difficult to articulate what my actual need in the process of being a dad is. And so it's just hard to both like push back on the thing and also share what I think I need that I'm exploring and have that just sort of safe space for that exploration.
Wow. I hadn't thought of it that way. And it really makes sense. I was just in New York for a week and yeah, there seems less observation and more justification. I think that's a really, really good insight. I hadn't thought of it like that at all. What about for you, Chase? Do you find it like you mentioned, you found it particularly unique to have these conversations inside of what we have built as a container? Why do you think that is for you?
And I don't think it's just exclusive to dads. I think culturally, like we are in these parasocial relationships where, you know, we see each other through a screen every day. We've lost that sort of third space where we get together, you know, out of work, out of home. Right. So I think anybody has lost the ability to connect on that deeper level. And I think what Rampus is saying is spot on, you know, we are afraid to be vulnerable with each other. Mom, dad, friend, parent, son, because of this projection societally through social media, et cetera, of this sort of perfect curated lifestyle. Right. So it's not just dads, but I think dads and men in general, it's crazy to say we've evolved as like a species for so long. And yet the gender norms around a man and being a dad, I think are still way outdated. You have to have this sort of machismo about you. You have to be this fearless leader. You have to have all the answers and carry things forward. And you know, I just don't think that it's a one size fits all for everybody. So as a dad, yes, but even as a friend, I don't have the depth of conversations with close friends that I did in this dad group of people that I had never met before. Right. So I don't think it's immune to just dads, but it's certainly lacking in a lot of areas of my life, I suppose.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense based on what I have heard throughout the interviews that I've done with dads across the globe and across the country. It's really interesting. One of the things that stood out the most for me was that, you know, as dads, we are as men, we are defining our identity around our fatherhood now more than ever before. But when it comes to our confidence level about how we're doing on that, it's like rock bottom. And I think for me, like this exploration has been totally selfish because it's like as soon as I can have a conversation with someone about something I'm scared of or uncertain of around fatherhood and then have someone respond with, oh, my God, I'm going through the same thing. Or, oh, my God, you think that's bad? You should hear what just happened to me. Like that it totally changes just my energy level. And, you know, even little things for me, I have two boys, right? They're 5 and 8. And they love to fight with each other as much as they love to hug each other. And I didn't know if I was doing something wrong, if this was always going to be this way, if I needed to police like every 5 minutes. And finally, I started interviewing some dads that had like 2 or 3 brothers themselves and then also had boys as kids. And they were like, oh, no. This is going to go on for the rest of their lives. And this is totally normal. And you don't have anything. And like, again, just hearing that, being able to ask it and then hearing that just gave me just a little bit more confidence. And I felt a little like I shouldn't feel embarrassed, but I felt a little bit embarrassed that like I was carrying that baggage unnecessarily. And all I had to do was ask the question. But I mean, we're creating these conversations because too many of us aren't asking the questions and having the conversations. And when something like this is so important, we need to. I feel like you have a thought on this, Chase.
No, I'm curious for you. I mean, you interview, you know, executives and leaders and, you know, you work on in a professional capacity, and I think it's interesting that you're blending it with the personal now, right? Like, why do you think that there is this separation of almost like church and state in a way, right? Like, why do you think as leaders, as whether it's an entrepreneur or a CEO of a company, there's a hesitancy to bring in that sort of personal, softer side, right? That in a way, I would think would humanize you as a leader, right? For your peers and your employees. Where do you feel like that friction is coming from?
Well, I think the best leaders today are bringing that human side. And I also want to credit not men for that. I want to credit women for that, right? Like they're the ones that bring like so much more of the emotional intelligence and like just I don't want to say softer side because that's not even the right word, but the side of leadership that is about empathy and engagement and connection. And the men that are now picking up on this and utilizing it are, I think, the best of the best leaders that I've seen as an executive coach and as a leadership expert. Hands down, that's true. But I think there are way too many industries where that is just not the norm, and changing the culture is taking eons and eons. And we even see going back to like everyone needs to be in the office all the time, right? Is immediately about like, this is an old model for how I think like running and managing people should be. And this new model where everyone's actually having their life integrated with their work doesn't make me feel comfortable. So we're all going to go back to the office. I mean, of course, there's some advantages around collaboration that some studies have found about everyone being in person. But now, you know, with all the technology that we can utilize, there's just as much advantage, if not 10 times more, because you're going to have more and better employees, the ones that are really going to stay engaged longer term if they can work on their own terms. But I think that's a big aspect of it. And I also think we weren't trained on how to do that. Like, first of all, too many students are getting business degrees and not degrees in areas, because those business degrees are teaching us how to think in a box. And that box is all about, this is the way we manage, this is the way we lead. And that's not the way people manage and lead their personal lives. And all of a sudden it's becoming like separated from an earlier age because they're getting an education around this. And it's the courageous people that are bringing back like the humanity to their management and their leadership that are going to change things, I think. But that's my soapbox. So
your show, man.
Let me ask you guys this too. So because this is about our challenges, like I'd love to hear a little bit about your challenges. So like in terms of balancing your career and being a dad, what do you think has been like, let's see, what's the biggest thing you've gotten wrong, for instance? And then also complement it with the biggest thing you think you've gotten right about balancing those two things.
You know, I think on the what I've gotten wrong, right? I think I'll think about it a little more and have Chase, I guess, jump into that and give you some time while you like thinking about that. Because for me, I'm like, it's hard to know, right? From like this focus around like kids and trying to kind of share and explore, you know, where I want to be in a dad and how I want to approach that in terms of like professional lenses and have that blended. It feels, even as you asked me the question, not obvious, because I feel like I've designed my life earlier on towards being a dad, right? So I became a dad later on in life, right? I'm in my late 30s. So I felt I had built much of what I thought my professional career would be. And I had sort of the space to kind of think about, you know, the time and energy and focus I wouldn't have that and have that space to do that. So most of my professional relationships have been through that kind of lens of I'm a dad and this is what I'm doing and all of that. So what I've gotten wrong, I don't know if wrong is the word I use, but I'd imagine I've taken it too far, right? In a different context, right? Sometimes I feel like if I have a feeling that it's stealing away from my energy and focus and presence as a dad, even as I'm on my own by myself, and it's a professional request context, you know, something I'm working on, then I'll put it aside, right? And I'll push back on that just because it feels very normal to like react around something related to an investment or money or a project or something. Just feels normal. So I've been just investing energy around just the automatic reaction to like a no around that and creating that space around, I don't even know what that I want to be and how I want to operate and function and exist and just, you know, just sit with how I'm feeling, who I am in that moment. So I probably, from a getting wrong, the answer is I don't know. And I'd imagine I've taken it too far where I feel like I would probably say no and have said no to a lot of different quote unquote opportunities and experiences in a, maybe a professional context. In lieu of like being with my boys and just being present and all that jazz, right? So that's, I think, on the wrong side. And on the right side, I'd imagine it's sort of the other part is true, right? I have, as best as I can, preserved that space. I mean, they're just small, right? 5 and 2.5. And the bet in my mind has always been like the regrets conversation, right? Also with the bitches that we've had around the 80-year-old self, right? I don't feel like, you know, regardless of what I've missed, maybe in a 5-year context and the compounding on that and then things, decisions I could have made, and best, I feel like worst case, I will not trade the money I've made then, or primarily just keeping it surgical around like just money I've made versus a relationship piece. 50 years from now and turn back and be like, oh, you know, I wish I had spent more time on like the lunch meeting, you know, which I coming from like to be here on this call versus like the kids. And I don't know if that's right at all. I just feel like that's the bet. I feel like that's quote unquote right for me. It feels right. But I also understand, I imagine it's also extreme because again, the mapping on how to navigate that feels very opaque, which goes back to the value of, you know, you guys and just helping me just kind of frame it, just triangulate from, you know, Chase's and others' experience and other folks. I feel like, you know, as best as I can.
What about you, Chase?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's very similar the way you described it. You know, I run my own company. I'm my own boss, but that's a double-edged sword, right? And the opacity behind that is tricky. You would, on one hand, you have people, my brother, my family that are in traditional jobs. Oh man, you're so lucky. You get to, you know, call your own shots and do your own thing on your own schedule. But that can be a blessing and a curse. You know, when it's just you, we tend to be our own kind of worst critic. So if I'm not out there hustling and putting more time and energy into it, which is a direct correlation to how much I can earn and grow my business, there's a lot of guilt. So there's guilt on the side of, am I doing enough and should I be doing more on the business side? And then on the other side of that rope, the tug of war is, am I doing too much or am I not doing enough with my children? And so there's no hard lines. There's no clock in, clock out. And I don't wish I had that because I purposely designed my life away from that. But I think there's a double-edged sword around being in control of your own domain, your own life, your own business, in navigating those shades of gray. How much is enough or too much, or on both sides of the spectrum, professionally and personally? And the greatest challenge I have is when to turn off. And when you have those blurred lines, like in my mind, I'm like, okay, great. Well, I'm not like really at the office once my kids come home, but am I still like on my phone? Am I cooking dinner and then also checking the email when they're trying to talk to me? So for them, it's confusing. For them, it's like I'm physically here at home, but when they see me on my phone, is dad just surfing the internet, which I'm not? Is he answering emails? Like, what is it? So I think it's unfair for them to like have me present in the home, and I work from home as well, and not having a clear delineation of I'm in work mode or I'm in dad mode. And that's been a real struggle for me to fully disconnect and find that balance.
Do you have a work mode space in your apartment so your kids can know the difference? Like, there's a closet in my apartment, which is also known as the office. So dad's in the office.
Yeah.
And that makes the delineation a little bit easier for my boys. Do either of you have something like that?
I have that space, but I mean, I also have a 4 and a 7-year-old. So like,
yeah.
Yes. Boundaries and spaces are like, yeah. I don't know if that's like a concept in their minds yet, right? Like, dad is home.
Yeah.
So it's a freaking free for all. No, but even if I'm in that space, they don't care actually. They'll wander onto a Zoom call and ask questions and can you wipe my ass and whatever. Like, there's no shame, but it's on the in between where I'm also not like a binary person. I'm not like, I'm in work when I'm in my office. And then I'm I'm not working. So like, it's that in between that is confusing for me and for them.
Yep.
No, I think that's where I double click on that. Right. I mean, that's, I experience the same thing, right? Around, I want to be available and also focused. So there is sort of a workspace. And then as maybe I get the interrupt for whatever reason, even though, you know, they're trying and working through understanding, you know, that is working and all these things, even this is quote unquote a work call. So we'll see. Right. I'm always like, oh, you know, maybe someone will come in the space. It still is sort of the vibe around, you know, they can come in. Right. And be a part of it. And where's the balance around that? And because I'll tend to cut around. Right, like engaging and just being there and available and balancing that out is sort of a work in progress, right? Because the older one, he's like understands more of that, right? And I try to keep it very surgical, right? Like these long stretches, I try to not do those, right? Because everything is like a call. So I can have like 5 to 15 minutes here, 5 to 15 minutes before, and just sort of frame it differently than, you know, maybe before kids was like, you know, 20 hours straight. And you're like, oh, I forgot to eat and like drink and wake, right? These little things, like on like running the business and like this sort of startup mode, I guess for me, like just I built companies earlier and then went through other experiences. That's been the challenge, right? The what got me here won't get me there. There being like the dad I want to be, right? So this like, you know, founder mode, 20 hours a day, just straight. It's like I was clear early on that like obviously that's not the jam, and yet, you know, what that balance and like new space for the kids and for them understanding, for me to frame it differently, for me to tell other people too, right? I feel like I've educated, you know, staff, team, friends, stakeholders on like, this is what's going on, right? If we're going to do business moving forward.
Yeah.
This is where I'm at. This is what I'm about. And it doesn't mean the results are any different, right? That's why, like, right. you can't function if there's any questions or results, which is a whole other, I think, longer conversation. I'm like, but like, I'm a dad now. Like, it's different. How is it not different? But like, at least internally, that's the bar. There's like a result. It has to come out. And I'm getting interrupted, you know, potentially in a 4-hour stretch, you know, 25 times. What does that look like? How does that get quantified? What's going on? But that's kind of where we're experimenting. You know, the older one, it's better at this. The younger one, you know, has no sense on that yet. But still, right? I get the space on like bringing them on the calls and see what happens. So we'll see. I guess that's kind of where it's been so difficult without spaces of hearing how other folks deal with this, because it feels like it's kind of a little bit me, myself, and I without the other ambitious dads are like, how good does it even work? Because everything feels like this huge risk that you're taking on every call and every interruption and everything. So, you know. Yeah.
It's funny. It sounds like what I'm hearing both of you say is a couple of different things. One, around like non-existent boundaries, which totally makes sense when our kids are this age, and maybe it makes sense. I don't know. I haven't had this conversation. What age that should actually end? Because part of me really enjoys that they feel comfortable to come in and you know, maybe that'll happen on a podcast. I have no idea. But it's also about this idea of balance, right? And, you know, I have spoken I told you over 150 men, and no one has an answer on balance. It's just like, it's a constant reshuffle, right? Like you were saying, Rampus, it's like, sometimes I overbalance in one way and sometimes I might overbalance in the other way. And, you know, same with Chase. It's like, you're going to feel guilty either way. You overinvest in your kids. I don't think you can overinvest in your kids, wrong language, but like you put all your focus on your kids and you're going to feel a little guilt about what you left behind from a work perspective. Right. And, you focus on your work because your family needs money. And then you feel a little guilty about our kids, and that never goes away. And then we add on top of it. Also, we have a partner to engage with and have a relationship with. And, I mean, maybe if we're lucky, we can focus on our health as well. And, you know, like everything in between. So, one of the things I noticed is, it's not the solution that's helpful in these conversations. It's just having the conversations. And I think from what I've seen from women who engage in this conversation, they're definitely not solving for each other. They're just expressing the challenges, and it makes it alleviates some of that baggage. So I hope it can for us too. What's the biggest question that Rampus, for instance, for you, what is the biggest question you're sitting with right now as a dad?
Am I using the time wisely, right? And that time being across all the different everything that require my focus and attention, right? So am I spending the time with my kids in the right way? Am I spending time thinking about the time I'm going to spend with the kids in the right way? Am I spending time building the business in the right way? Am I spending time with the people related to the business or not in the right way? It's really a lot of time conversation and energy and focus and just schedules a lot. So the biggest question mark is like, is this the right investment, right? In different contexts, I try to not.
Let's get more acute though. Like your son just got sick, right? So right. Like in this moment, it's like illness, and like, what does that feel like as a dad, right? Totally helpless, requiring like doctors, right? Yeah. And like, describe that feeling. Cause I think all had that feeling.
And I'll come refresh on this. My son was left like hospital yesterday, and today we're kind of coming back into things. When that happened on that Thursday, right? It's like everything's clean, right? The entire schedule, it doesn't matter. I didn't know what day it was on Saturday, right? Like by Saturday, I didn't know where it was. It was just all about like activating all the resources required to make sure that what's happening in the immediate, because he had like an upper respiratory thing, and we're unsure. We're going to have thoughts, but like, it's like, you're not going to, take any chances on what might or might not be, right? So you're just like activating everything around that. And there are no thoughts around anything else Friday, right? And there's all kinds of scheduling things, or like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all kinds of things. And they just got cleaned out, right? And I'm thankful I had that space. But regardless, that was sort of the calculus, right? There were things that I maybe in a different life would think back on them, but just clean that out. And then when I'm there, I'm there. That's what's going on, right? I'm with the younger one, like the older one that he's like experiencing like that time away with the younger one for the first time, because before we moved to Puerto Rico from New York, we kind of homeschooled and we're just getting into summer for the first time. So we have both of them. So we're like, what's happening is like the older one, right? Like I'm with him and then I'm switching with the younger one. The point being like everything is all about that. And then I'm thankful, which is part of the experience of coming down, around activating the family and experiencing that and engaging and figuring that out, which is new as well, right? Coming to New York, there's no family, there's no, so all that was what's going on. And it isn't really until like Monday, Tuesday, when there's very clear visibility that, you know, the little one is coming out of the hospital, to be like, everything comes back up, right? Then you look back and it'll be like, check email or check things and check the schedule and check whatever. You're like, okay, you know, we'll send the schedule for this week, because again, I'm like, this week is still about even reintegrating the family, because, you know, we've paused everything in a very kind of extreme way, because we didn't know what's going on, which is a very extreme everything in the context of like potential disease and just scared, right? Like, what the fuck is going on? And like, you know, you don't want to like underreact in those situations. I think was a lot of kind of checklist to then being like, you know, I missed like an LP and I got no meeting like yesterday, and I didn't even excuse myself. That was yesterday. And today I have thing on a calendar. I didn't even confirm on some of the other colleagues that were going to meet up, and they confirmed today, but I didn't take it off the calendar. So I went, right? So it was there this morning. I came up and like, so I think the point being that the balance is not there. I was like, I went full extreme all the calendar. I don't care. Right. And actually, I was taking a quick note, like if I get any inbound or anything, this like secret notes of someone about something that I missed in that, you know, 5 days, that's like a flag, like people I don't want to do business with, people I don't want to be invested with, people I don't want to do, right? Right. So I'm like also secretly actually saying out loud to you, it's like, oh, like tracking. It's like, okay, how are folks reacting to what's going on? Because this is what's going on. So that's the short version of the maybe. I haven't even debriefed. I think this, I appreciate your question, Jeff, because it's the first time like decompressing, because it is scary though too. I'm like, oh man, you know, I left, you know, potentially actually haven't looked on the Monday, because for sure Monday, you know, I kind of cancel things, but I'm sure like things happen that, you know, I didn't even look at, where like, how are folks reacting to what's going on? Am I getting feedback around, you know, my approach to things? And again, you know, as Chase mentioned it, you own your business, you have the kind of space, and it's sort of different. And it's also like, I don't know what I don't know about how folks are taking, you know, my approach to cleaning my slate, because, you know, I'm a dad, like that's what's going on. And I have a little one that's sick, and I have no space to entertain anything other than, you know, how can I help you, Ramfest? You know, what, how can I support you in this moment kind of thing?
You know, I think actually, and first of all, I know that fear and that helplessness, and I really empathize. My son broke his leg skiing when he was 4, and that was like just, I felt like such, well, that was a little different. I felt like a failure. I don't think you have any reason for your son having a virus to feel like a failure, but it's just like, you know, learning to deal with this fact that yeah, they're vulnerable. Even though my son within a year said like jumping off the couch and nearly killing himself, but being fine, and me saying, what are you doing? You're crazy. And he said, what are you talking about? I'm invincible. And I said, you broke your leg last year. And he goes, I'm invincible now. I was like, yes, yes, that's exactly how I think a child would interpret that. But yeah, so really like, empathize deeply. But what I also wanted to say was the way you express it to the people that you work with also helps change culture, like with work, change culture, not just for you as a dad, but also for mothers, right? You know, we don't have the same glass ceiling. So when we talk about like, you know, we're not going to be there because we have a responsibility around fatherhood, that hopefully starts to open the door for more people to be able to say that. So I think it's more than a test. I think it's opening up business to a more like human development, which I hope we continue to drive towards. Chase, separately, like what's like just in terms of where your kids are in their lives and how they're developing, like what are you freaked out about at the moment? Cause we're all freaked out about something related to our kids.
Yeah. my kids are very, very different. You know, my daughter's very much sort of an emotional creature, you know, very like wears her heart on her sleeve. Very much an empath. And my son is like, he's all id. He's all energy all the time. And it's tough because when you're trying to, like, what I'm worried about as a parent is trying to parent them fairly and equally, even though they demand and require very, very different styles of parenting.
By the way, just acknowledging that you are trying to parent them differently to their needs is like next level fatherhood. I want to pause and give you credit for that, because before it was like, here's my method for parenthood and it applies to all children, and you know, that's why there was always one screwed up kid in every family.
yeah send me that soundbite and I'll share it with my wife and we'll put it on repeat. Yeah. So, and we did this exercise in Founding Fathers, which was extremely helpful, right? Looking at the different ages and stages of life and what is required of them. And I think that helped me unpack it even more so. But knowing that, you know, my son takes a lot of energy and patience from my wife and I, like, and he gets us to that boiling point. And then all of a sudden my daughter has like one moment and it sends us boiling over. And that's not fair to her, right? She didn't do steps 1 through 9. She just did the last, you know, linchpin. And so I'm trying to acknowledge and be patient with her, even though we've been raised to like red alert with my son all day long, and vice versa, me mindful about that, not shaming my son in front of my daughter, right? Because she revels in it, right? Like when she knows that she's being the angel and he's being like a little difficult. Daddy, can I help with any? Can I get you anything? Like, are you doing she like really works it. And I'm like, Ella, I know what you're doing. Please let me. And then she starts to take on the parenting. Jack, you're not supposed to do that. Looking to me for affirmation. So, you know, you don't want to give my, I don't want to give my son a complex around like, you're taking everything from us right now. I don't want my daughter to see that. And then I don't want him to feel like we are favoring her, and it's not the case, right? So that's a constant juggling act, is doing what each of them need from us, showing up as the best parent, even though it's completely 180 different parenting styles, like couldn't be more different. And then trying to dose it out equally, because we all know like the younger sibling like gets to the short end of the stick. Like everything is much more precious when you have one and ever. And then it's like, you know, here, go have some scraps. Like, oh, you scraped your knee, whatever. So it's interesting. Like, I just reflect on me being an older child and then my brother and our dynamic. So you're constantly reflecting of how we were raised, good or bad, and then trying to break some of those cycles as parents. And then just, you know, look, it's all about leveling up, right? It's like, if you can level up even a little bit for our kids, then that's a win and they're going to do even more. So.
I love that you shared that, because I mean, for sure, it's the same thing. Instead of the dynamic you described where your eldest is trying to like win favor with you in that situation, but it doesn't even matter which one is in meltdown, like the other will just jump into the meltdown and like just double down on it. And so it's just all over the place, right? I mean, And I don't know if it's their dynamic or if it's a boy thing or what have you, but I just so appreciate that. And it's totally true. And there are some times, I don't know about you guys, but there are some times when I am in the middle of it and I am like, there is no way I am getting out of this situation with both kids like happy or content. I just there is no right answer in this moment. And almost always that happens like 10 minutes after I've just patted myself on the back and I'm like, oh, I'm doing really well with the boys like this afternoon. This is going great. And then it's just like, oh my God, like, how can this be? So yeah. And really, to be able to talk about this is just so nice, because, normally at least with my wife, the conversation is an argument because we're stuck on this idea of that maybe if there was no right way, maybe the other way that they wanted to do it might have worked better. And then like, you know, that comes into the mix, and no one's trying to be like hurtful to each other. We're all just trying to make it best for the kids. And then, but there's stuff there is no right answer. So it just gets messy. It just gets so messy.
I think that's been the biggest, like one of the biggest challenges is like, there's no peer group around getting feedback other than, you know, your partner, your wife around there.
No 360 reviews.
Right. Yeah. No 360s. Right. I mean, that's exactly the point I was feeling where I was hearing kind of Chase and you about this was, you know, there, we have all these templates across everything professional where it's like measured super clean. Right. And we have so many iterations of those things that like high stakes, low stakes, no stakes. Like it just feels right. The engineer in me feels like, yeah, you know, I got that mapped out. That's chill. Right. And you mess up, you know, how badly you mess up and you have some templates and you're like, whatever, I'll do me. Versus here, you can't get it wrong. You get like the one shot and then you have like no real time feedback. Like Chase just shared something. I'm like, I want to unpack that with Chase. I'm like, you know, and just like learn, right? Just hearing that in a way that like makes my day because now I'm thinking about that. I'm like, oh, you know, I have so many different versions of that. But then there's no peer that's like trying to like not mess up in whatever that means. And we can talk about what that means in a no judgment way. And then we can try things in a no judgment way. And then we can mess up in a no judgment way, right? Like that stuff is just not readily available day to day. And the ambitious dads like open that up for me and be like, yeah, I'm hearing all this stuff. But there's no try of a template, right? Versus what you share with us, Jeff. And like, this is how we think about this and these questions and kind of exploring that. So that's kind of where I'm. You know, I'm at, right? It's just having that opportunity has been amazing.
What was the most useful thing? Like, you know, we've had lots of conversations in the Founding Fathers program, right? Where, you know, we spent 12 Wednesday, you know, lunchtimes talking about all sorts of different aspects of fatherhood, from what it means to be a great dad to how we talk to our kids about money and you know, how we deal with their dysregulation and our own. Like what was the thing that was most like needed for each of you?
Everything. When you sent out like this survey afterwards and you're like, rated, how effective was this? I was like 10. And like, obviously kudos to you, but more so because I don't think I've ever spent any time even exploring these concepts, like aware of different things, but never within, as Ramfus was saying, within a construct, within a framework, within a set of sort of parameters and how to measure. But the one thing that stands out to me was, and I'm going to butcher like the metaphors, right? Like, are you, what is it, like a rock or the trampoline or the, what was this? It was the...
This was the kind of like how you present yourself to your kids, right? So are you the rock, like you're yep. always there protecting them? Or are you what do we, it was like the sofa or the chair where like
soft,
you're
one, the heart one.
The soft place where they can come, and then the trampoline is where it's like you're letting them grow and
yeah.
crazy and like yeah.
The way you framed it was interesting because you, I think you had it like, what did you get from your father, right? And then what do you feel that you are naturally inclined to give your kids? But then what do your kids really need from you, right? And so you're exploring it through different lenses. Like you're playing like 4D chess. You're like, wow, well, I've got this like deep-rooted, ingrained like trauma of like, not in a bad way, but like the way I was raised and the way I'm overcompensating from that. And then what they really need is somewhere in between and trying to figure out that messy middle, which was wild. And I told my wife about that too. And she's like, well, which one do you think you are? And I think I probably changed my mind on it like three different times, but at least conceptually, the awareness of being able to have those anchor points was super, super helpful for me. And being like, there isn't one prescription and it can waver. But the most important thing that, you know, I kept coming back to with the prompt you had was like, well, what do they need from you now? Right? Like everything else is just bullshit. It's in your head. It's head trash. But what do they need? What do they need from you right now? And that's kind of taking a little bit of work.
I love that, because even for me, like creating that, it was so interesting, because it was this journey of I am presenting myself as like the soft space, you know, the chair, because I wanted more of that myself as a kid. But then, as you said, what did they really need? And so if you then take a broad look overall at like how you're parenting, like how much of it then is what I didn't get and that what I wanted versus what they really need. And that's like a whole nother balancing act, right? Like trying to figure out what we're putting into our kids because we wanted it as a kid versus what they're actually asking for. Not that they can necessarily communicate it either at, you know, sub 10 years old or anything, but what about for you, Ramfis? What stood out for you the most?
I mean, I absolutely want to just double down on the frameworks that Kennedy shared. Right around just even anchoring things. It's just sort of putting words and frameworks and things that like maybe one had already as like practitioner we're thinking about or whatever. It's just words, right? And Chase, as we were talking, I was pulling up the that legacy. It's like the trampoline thing, because that was the thing that stood out to me. I was thinking the same as you're asking the question, and then Chase answered first. I was like, oh, that was a big one as an example, right? But all of it was just first, like having like the prompts to like ask myself on things like, yeah, I've thought about them, but like, have you thought about them? You know, like going over and structuring, like you would do something professionally, like at the, like, this is the bar. And then have you thought about it? And then having some version of that, like all of that, this game changer on, hey, these other guys, they're like committed to this jam because this is kind of what's going on that I don't have. It's like, am I thinking about this in the right way? Am I using the right tools? Am I having the right experiences? I'm like, what's right? It's just so much. And then it was clear as we were seeing the frameworks, right? I was seeing the spouse piece, like the negotiation piece. I remember somewhere where, you know, there are all these conversations. Like, do we have these conversations? Do we agree? And like the lawyer in me is like, do we agree on these things? Where
this was the mismatched parenting philosophies, right? Yeah.
It was cool, man. Like the co-parenting, there was like a co-parenting breakout and like throwdowns and favorites or something. And so the point being the framers and the language around things that like, you're like, bam, your dad go, right? Because the 2025 version of this dad is not as, I mean, for me, has felt like has not a lot to do with the models collectively I had, or my dad or others, just things that, sure, you pull, but sort of the whole thing, the integrated version of that was like nowhere to be seen, at least not how I felt, versus, you know, have you had this conversation? Like, who are you? What do they need? Like, what's your role? Like, oh, yeah, sure. Yes, yes. And I would answer things with them like, oh, I gotta talk this with my spouse, the therapist, and the guys, and this or that, right? There's a lot of that. Jared feels like, oh, like I'm carving out time for this as well. Like, here's time around a thing that you're kind of intuitively from a practitioner, you're just doing it because you're in there and you're thinking about it, you're worrying about it. But like, it was just extremely helpful, useful to kind of create that kind of cadence, consistency, and like, oh, you know, they think about this thing, like, oh, you know, I have this thing in my inbox. I gotta think about it. You said you wanted to think about this, Ram. Was like, is it true? Like, are you putting time on it? Like, come on. You're bullshit. Like, there's no one here. You know, you can be honest. Like, are you going to fill this out? What's going on? There's a lot of that piece, that practice that was just super cool. Right. And there's unfortunately, nowhere to be seen.
And you know, it's amazing because, and this is one of the reasons why I'm doing this with you all. It's like, I'm a guy. I know how we all think about business, right? We think about strategy and we think about process and we even think about metaphors, right? We think about all the things that are required to be successful. And then we're all saying none of that is anywhere close to in importance as being a dad and raising our kids. And yet none of us have any of this structure to think about it, right? And it was like, when I realized that, it was just like, duh. And I'm part of it too. Like, I'm a dad by intention. Like I couldn't have biological kids, and starting my family and wanting to be a great dad meant everything and means everything to me. And still here I was, you know, 5-6 years into being a parent, and I was like maybe learning on a random Instagram video from time to time, right? I hadn't cracked a book. I was trying to have a few conversations, but that was it. And it was like, all right, how am I going to really invest in this the way I would invest in my business? And that's how this came to be. And I think that might be why it resonates too, because we all recognize this. We just recognize it from the other part of our life. So yeah. All right. Well, we're getting close to the end. I want to finish up. I'm trying to create a ridiculous piece at the end of our podcast where I ask for a poop story. Does anyone have a ridiculous poop story? Because after all, there's nothing like being a parent if there isn't fecal matter or wet beds or something involved that just really brings us back down to earth, right? It doesn't matter if we own our own business. It doesn't matter if we manage lots of people. At the end of the day, we are wiping bums and cleaning poop off walls. And so does anyone have an interesting story?
I'll start up. I'm putting me, Jason. When my son was born, right, I was so in awe of what my wife, you know, pulled off and all that. I was like, what can I add? Raise the bar. And I named myself, you know, the head of the waste department. I was like, I'm going to get down everything about waste and like the diapers and the jam. I was like, I was going to get into this. And we had this kind of running joke where like the smallest one had, you know, so, like a projectile poop. And it was like very small. It would do the projectile poop. And I would call it like running poop, like la caca corriendo, like running poop, because it was like, right. And there's this one time where, you know, he, for some reason, either we were washing him in their apartment. And between him being washed and going to, you know, to change, I was like, I think there's a good chance that there will be like projectile poops. I gotta like hurry up and like do this thing and go, right? So I was just like on my way over and he just like projectile pooped all over like the apartment. Like, and I just get there in time. And, you know, then you know, you pick it up, whatever. But I think to me was just hilarious, like that you get like to know like this it could happen. And then like you don't want it to happen. Like, I know, you're like, come on, ref, like get it together, do it. So like this doesn't ever happen. And I think it was like maybe a few months in of like, you know, I think I'm doing great. This didn't happen. And then I was like, oh, I think I got this down and I got make it in time. And it was like, this is like projectile. It was just like the Disney, like fountains.
That's much. That is a perfect story. What about you, Chase?
I've got like, I feel like I blacked out most of the earlier like trauma from like literally I can't remember, because I think it was just, I just black it out. But I have like a quick, can I have a poop and a pee story?
Of course.
Very, very short. But like similar to like Rampus, it's like you think you know. So like my son used to take a shit in the bath time like clockwork every night.
Yes.
Every night. Like something about the warm water was like soothing to him.
Of course.
And like, he would just all of a sudden, oh, we got a floater, everybody out of the tub, and like get my daughter, get him. And then, you know, the toys have to be sanitized. And just like every single night without fail, there was a floater moment, floater in the pool. And we would usually have to just, if we had like the little bath, you know, spooper cup, whatever, use that. Or like a lot of times just hand hold and just like, screw it. We're just going to handhold it. So that I will never forget. He was just a perennial just bathtub pooper. But just to like show that this stuff never, well, at least at this point, does not go away. It sucks. I'm like picking on my son so much. So he's fully potty trained, but he still has accidents at night. He still pees at night, because like boys just don't give a shit apparently, and they don't learn as quick as girls do. So he pee, you know, we have this little pee pad, and he has his accidents at night, and it happens quite frequently. And so like he'll soak his pajamas and his pee pad and everything like that. So we rip it off in the morning. So this is also pretty regular, but the other day I'm putting on my clothes and I notice there's like a stench on my clothes and I'm like, God, this smells like pee. Like, but I didn't like, this is fresh clothes. I just washed this, right? Like, what's going on? And so this started happening day after day after day with like multiple pieces of clothing. I'm like, what's going on? So reverse engineer the story. My wife was taking the soaked pee pajamas and pee pad, putting it in the laundry with the rest of our clothes. And every wash was coming out, like saturating the rest of our clothes in this pee smell. So we were like going through everything being like, it's got to be somewhere. But we just kept doing it over and over and over because in the middle of the night, you're just throwing everything in the washing machine. And so now most of our clothes just have a little hint of pee smell to them. So that's the pee-pee story.
And you're saying it's not a good detergent.
We use like a natural detergent because I'm like, but we should probably switch to like full-on bleach Tide, like whatever it is. Like, because something's got to kill it.
I think you got bleach built in now, but
we got the ammonia built in.
Yeah, the ammonia. Uh-huh. Awesome. Well, that is a perfect place to end. Guys, thank you so much for this conversation. It was like, well, first of all, it was fun. And secondly, like always, I just felt, I feel that much better as a dad, just connecting on this stuff. And I also feel a little more connected to you guys. And I really appreciate that. And I appreciate your time. And most importantly, I really appreciate your trust and being the guinea pigs on this first program that we launched.
Yeah, no, thank you for putting this together. I mean, you've been amazing, Sherpa, right? I mean, it's hard space and, you know, you've been amazing, right? Even keeled on like guiding us to like, all the stories and everything else. So appreciate it.
The Jeff Sherpa. We're grateful, my friend. Thank you for being
all right. Well, thanks, guys.